I'm Bill Hall, Chair of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners. This is Wayne Belmont, our County Legal Counsel. Janet Harrison is our paralegal and is here staff support tonight. Just want to let everyone know that the meeting is being recorded and we're posting this on the county website for people who can't make it to be able to hear it. And I want to walk through just some general introductory remarks about what we're proposing, why we're here, next steps. Then I'll hand off to Mr. Belmont for kind of a walkthrough of the ordinance in some detail. And then we'll open up the floor to questions and comments. And you may know, let's see, the City of Lincoln City, City of Newport, City of Yahats have all licensed vacation rentals for years. We have never licensed them before in the unincorporated areas of the county. So this is a new idea. Although it did actually come up for discussion about 20 years ago. You may remember that Rhodes End was only annexed into Lincoln City just a few years ago. And that's a pretty large built-up area with a lot of VRDs. And at the time, the Rhodes End Homeowners Group approached the county commissioners who were in office at the time, and they wanted the county to essentially legislate VRDs out of existence. And the county doesn't have the legal authority to do that. And even as a practical matter, I think it was a battle nobody would have been interested in, even if it had been possible. But the county commissioners at the time, and I recall this because I was a reporter covering the county at the time, Mr. Belmont was in his same position back then, the county commissioners said they would be willing to look at a licensing program. But the Rhodes End people said, no, we're not interested in that, do away with them or nothing. So basically the matter was dropped. And that's where it stood until about 2 years ago, when what I would say is a trickle of complaints about VRDs suddenly turned into a flood. And not all of them, but the vast majority, have come from the Glenedon Beach, Lincoln Beach area, because that is probably the last really large built-up area outside of any city limits that has sewering. So that's allowed for denser development, and that's also allowed for the construction of larger homes. And what we have heard there very much echoes the complaints we heard from Rhodes End 20 years ago. Negative impacts on the quality of life on the neighborhood for the year-round residents. And although other issues come up, almost all of them center around noise, parking issues, and trash issues. So that is the number one reason that we're doing it. But still, I think an important secondary reason, too, is wanting to make sure all lodging properties are on a level playing field, that everybody is paying the transient room tax. And I think right now our treasurer's office is making their best effort to identify rental properties of all, short-term rentals of all types out in the unincorporated areas, but they don't have the same resources that this program will create to do that. I want to, again, before I get to next steps, just want to address three questions that have come to me kind of about the philosophical reason for doing this. Somebody asked, well, don't we have mechanisms to deal with these issues already? And the answer would be yes, but let's, what did we call the guy from Idaho the other night in Lincoln City when we had it? Was it Joe Idaho? I think. But let's say you've got a guy from Idaho who comes and stays at a vacation rental in Bayshore, blocks the street with his car, parties loud till 3 a.m., the sheriff's office comes. Of course, they'll cite him. But if he never comes back to Oregon, that's going to be of limited value. What this licensing program will do is give us a gradually escalating enforcement mechanism for rental owners that have, you know, a repeated pattern of not holding their tenants accountable, not dealing with complaints, that we can deal with it, all the way up to the ultimate hammer of revoking the license to rent. So I think that addresses another question that has come to me. Well, are we just letting renters off the hook? No, not at all. Like I say, the sheriff will still cite Joe Idaho, but again, we've got this mechanism in place. And somebody also asked me, well, why are we demonizing VRD owners? We're not. I mean, we've had two prior discussions of this, one at the Board of Commissioners meeting 3 weeks ago, and then we had a similar session like this in Lincoln City 2 nights ago. And what was really heartening to me is, in addition to hearing from a lot of neighbors impacted by VRDs, we also heard from, I think, three different either property managers, and I think one of them was an owner manager, and at least they all felt, you know, there was some discussion and questions about the nuts and bolts of the ordinance, but in a broad philosophical sense, they said they really felt that something like this was reasonable and necessary to deal with those few bad actors out there. So next steps, after tonight, we've got one more listening session, I think week after next in Newport. And then the first week in May, this will come back before the Board of Commissioners. And at that time, Mr. Belmont and I will report to the other two commissioners about the results of this meeting. And then, you know, the commissioners could, as a whole, we could take several different courses of action, adopt the proposal as is, adopt it with tweaks, or maybe take another approach. But at this point, I want to hand off to Mr. Belmont to walk through the nuts and bolts, and then we'll open it up for questions and discussion.
Thank you, Chair Hall. And the first thing is to make sure that everybody's got copies of the draft ordinance and the proposal, kind of summary of what we're trying to do here. This is also available for those who might listen to the tape. It's available at the county website at www.co.lincoln.or.us. You can click on, there's some click-throughs, and you'll get to these particular materials. You can listen to the presentations that have been made. You can also make comments online. There's a way to email comments if you, after listening to today, you have some additional comments you might want to make, and we'll receive those and share those with the other commissioners.
Or if you know people who can't make it tonight and they want to email and say, this is great, this stinks, or anything in between, that's a way for them to provide feedback.
So I'm going to provide a little bit more of an overview of what the proposed ordinance would do, but this is really your opportunity. We want to hear from you. And so we're going to leave lots of time for you to provide us comments and feedback on what's being proposed. As Chair Hall indicated, this is a business licensing program. I want to state this up front, say it real clearly. This is not a land use regulation. This is not a land use ordinance. That may be only important to people like me, attorneys, but it needs to be real clear that that's not what we're trying to do here. This is a licensing program. And really its purpose, I think, I actually like the purpose statement that's contained in the summary material, but it also is reflected in the preamble to the ordinance itself. What we're trying to do is to establish, so I'm going to read this one. We're establishing operating standards for rental of short-term dwelling units through the creation of a business licensing program that allows operation of such rentals in a manner that respects and protects the livability of neighborhoods in which these rentals are located. And all the terms really kind of feed into that purpose statement there, and that's really what we're trying to do. Important a key factor in this thing is that it applies to short-term rental of housing units, and that's, we define that as up to 30 days. Those things are defined as well as a number of other things within the ordinance as drafted. We create the Lincoln County Housing Authority. One of the things that...
Not Housing Authority.
I'm sorry. The Licensing Authority.
You've already got a Housing Authority.
Yeah, I've got housing on my mind. I guess it must be that. The Lincoln County Licensing Authority. That will be the group that will actually administer and enforce the licensing requirements. And the way we've designed this is actually that's going to be done by the County Sheriff's Office. and they're going to do that in cooperation with the Lincoln County Treasurer's Office. You might ask, why the Sheriff's Office? Well, there's several reasons for that. Number one is they are actually the agency that actually responds to many of the complaints that come through. When there's an issue with somebody parking inappropriately or illegally, when there is somebody who's violating our county noise ordinance, when there's a mouse voice party going on out there, they're the ones that receive the calls. They're the ones that try to respond to this. So it's really a logical and nice fit to have the Sheriff's Office do this. They also administer a number of licensing programs already. They're very, very capable of doing that. They have a lot of experience. And we think that in addition to doing the front end of part of the licensing, which is to make sure that the VRD owners actually comply with those requirements, they have the tools and the skill set to do the enforcement. When they undertake an activity, when they research something, when they determine there's violations there, they got a lot of experience with dealing with that. So it was really, for us, a logical fit to work with the Sheriff's Office to do this. The operating standards that we're looking at with the business licensing program are very similar to what we've seen in other programs around the state, especially on the coast. And I should say that we're not inventing anything new, really, with this. We've looked at programs in a number of other communities, and this ordinance itself is based on one that was done and has been operating very successfully in Tillamook County.
So isn't that been in place for about 5 years?
About 5 years, I think. That's right. And so we're looking at something that's got a track record, that has some history, and has operated very successfully. So key features of the operating standards are the number one thing that we see that has to happen here is, first of all, there has to be a contact person that the VRD owner designates and shares with the neighborhood and with anybody else, so that you know when you've got a problem, when you've got an issue with something going on with that, there's somebody you can call, somebody you can talk to who can attempt to resolve that particular issue. One of the questions we're going to ask you, one of the things that we've been looking at here, is whether or not that contact person has to be a local person within Lincoln County. And that is it's interesting because some of the ordinances just say you have to have a contact person. It could be the homeowner lives in Philomath or Corvallis, and it wants to be the contact person.
California.
Yes.
New York.
Canada.
Yeah,
that's one of the things in terms of, well, there's some requirements for that person if you're the contact person that you need to do, take some actions if there's a complaint received. We'll talk about those in a minute. That, you know, makes it more difficult, obviously, if you do this from a remote location. But one of the questions we ask you, and some of the feedback we've been getting is, do you think it would be more effective if it's a local contact person? Wait to hear from you. I can tell you this, though, it's probably no surprise that most of the feedback we've been getting back is that is one of the number one things we're hearing back is make this a local contact person. That really, really makes it successful.
And could I interject something here, Mr. Belmont?
Sure.
Again, you know, it could be a local management company, but not necessarily. Like, say, if we do have that hypothetical person in Philomath who has a VRD over here, if they want to contact with, like, one of the local 24-hour security services, that they would take and respond to the calls, as long as they've got somebody local who's available to respond within the response time of the ordinance.
We're requiring that contact information actually be made available to surrounding neighbors. Again, we're trying to make it compatible in the neighborhood where you have people who may be residents, full-time residents, and those that are doing VRD. So contact information, the phone numbers, need to be provided within 250 feet of the VRD. You need to get that information out to your neighbors out there. In fact, we recommend, honestly, if you're doing one of these kinds of things, one of the best ways you can make sure that there aren't problems that occur is go meet your neighbors, talk to them, say, here's what I'm doing. I've got a VRD here. You know, here's my number. Here's what you can do to call me or the contact person I've designated here if you see any problems in here. They're also going to have to provide that information to the local fire department and to the sheriff's office. We're going to make them post a sign on the VRD with the phone number so that if you forget the number, if you're given that and you forget it, you need it, you're hearing a loud party going on in there, you can walk next door, see a phone number there, and make a call. So that local contact is or a contact person, if it is local, is a key cog in the operating standards. then once that you have that contact information, then we provide for a process that says that the owner, through the contract person, must respond to complaints when they receive them within a reasonable period of time. We've left the reasonable period of time open at this point, although that's been part of our discussion here, and we'd ask that question to you. What do you think is a reasonable period of time to respond? And it could be, and we've heard people talk about anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour to potentially longer.
But definitely not 48 hours.
Not 48
hours. Somebody was afraid we'd say 48 hours was reasonable. No.
No. And so a reasonable person standard is something you see a lot of times in ordinances. And it gives some discretion for us to, as the enforcement agency, to kind of look at each situation individually and react to it. But it also puts a requirement on there that the contact person, if there's a complaint, that they actually respond to it. The specific standards we're looking at, there's basically four operating standards that we're looking at up front. First is what we call quiet time. And that actually just coincides very nicely with the county noise ordinance. And that says there has to be quiet time, and that's defined in our county noise ordinance, between 10 p.m. at night and 7 a.m. the next day. So, you know, excessive noise that occurs at these late night parties would be a violation of those quiet time provisions here. Second thing that we look at is garbage service. This is an area we heard a lot of complaints about. And we're requiring that the owner of the VRD provide and maintain adequate garbage service. In Lincoln County, there is garbage, franchised garbage service available to every property in the county. That's one of the reasons why we do franchising. So there's nobody that can say there isn't garbage service available to my property. It is there. We know that. One of the discussions we've been having is whether or not we're going to require the owner to actually have the service with the franchise hauler, or they can provide an alternative plan. So, for instance, we heard from two nights ago, who said, I contract with a housing service that actually comes in, and each time my house is rented, they clean up. And part of the contract I have there is that person who cleans up takes the garbage out. So it's actually taken each time it's used, rather than waiting for a weekly pickup or whatever the service, other service might be.
So a contract like that, probably if that provision stays as is, would be acceptable, but saying, I'll come pick it up after people leave, or I'll tell people to carry it out themselves, would not be acceptable.
Yeah. So we're considering the possibility of having alternatives to having a franchise service. One of the other issues, and we'd like to hear from you if this is a problem too, is that they say, well, sometimes those containers, it's great, they're wonderful, but you got the containers to sit on there week in, week out. They never get moved from the road. And if that is an issue for people, is that a problem? Most of the franchise companies that do the service out here have what they call concierge service, basically gate-to-road service. They will come in on the days of pickup and actually go back behind the gate, pick up the garbage, pick up the recycling, take it out, empty it, and take it back with their concierge service. As you can imagine, that's more expensive than the regular service that you or I might have. But it may be something we want to look at there if that's an issue. Right now, we basically said that you have to have franchise service or an alternative, but that was another issue that came up and we discussed. Probably the biggest issue that we have to deal with, at least in the areas in North County that came up, is parking. That it's quite difficult sometimes for these, when the VRDs come in, that a lot of parking spaces get taken. And so what we're doing is requiring that the owner provide us with a parking plan. We've got specific parking requirements that they would have to show us. One parking space per sleeping area. Sleeping area is another issue. We're going to have to work on a definition of what that entails. And then one plus one per dwelling unit. And we're actually going to say that for those VRDs that come into existence after the ordinance is in place, that's going to have to be off-street parking. They have to show us a plan that shows that available parking is there and available off street. That's part of what they need to do. It's more difficult when you got existing VRDs and whether or not they actually can have that parking on site. But we're telling them, show us then where the parking is. Where is there legal parking available to you if you're not going to do it, if you're going to use the on street? Where is that going to be located? And how's that going to do? We're requiring that the parking not be done in a way that hinders emergency vehicle access. So where there are designated areas in which you cannot park, And that you wouldn't have to be just an emergency vehicle, but if there are places where parking is prohibited and there's repeated parking that occurs there because of your rental of this unit, then that could be a violation of our particular code and could lead to enforcement action against the owner. So we're going to try and address that way. This is and I just want to be upfront, it's probably the most difficult area for us to regulate. We're going to look at other tools as we go along and try and do something that works it out between neighbors. The fourth area, I think the one that may generate some interest from VRD owners, is we're going to put a limit on occupancy. That has been an issue, especially in the North County, where you have some fairly, mega structures is what they're calling
them. Can I give the example? Is it Neptune?
I think it's on Neptune.
Yeah, Neptune Avenue in Lincoln Beach, which is a rutted, dead-end street. At the end of that street, there's one 5,000-square-foot house that was advertising that it slept 35 people, and the house on the opposite side of the street was advertising that it would sleep 25. Well, no way we'd ever approve a 60-unit motel at the end of a narrow, dead-end street, I don't think. But this is essentially the same thing in a different guise.
So we're putting in order to get the license, we're putting in a limitation that's tied in and uses as a framework some things that are in the Uniform Building Code. And we're saying that occupancy is calculated. You can have three people per sleeping area plus an additional two with a maximum occupancy of 16 at any one of these VRDs. So that's the operating standards, and that's what we're going to try and get people to adhere to. I was going to say, let me go through the process first, if you don't mind, and then we'll take the questions and comments. So hold those, note them, and we'll come back to you. But let me try and get through the presentation a little bit more. I'm going to talk a little bit now about the complaint enforcement process, and then the revocation or denial or non-renewal of license, those two areas. So a complaint process first is, again, with this contact information, we're trying to do this informally first. And the idea is you make that phone call to the contact person, they try and take care of it. You work with your neighbor, you know, take care of those particular issues. We also have available, we've got some county mediation resources that are out there. If this is an ongoing problem, we want to work with the VRD owner in the neighborhood to see, can we resolve these things? Can we get on the same page and make sure that these don't become an issue? So there's this informal process that starts that out. But that doesn't work if the violation continues, if the complainant says they're not responding, repeated problems are occurring in there, then there is a process in which written complaints can be filed with the licensing authority, with the sheriff's office. And then that there's a process there that we'll try to resolve those problems from the sheriff's office, but if they can't be resolved, then they'll make a determination. And if the determination is there's a violation of this ordinance, we have a number of enforcement mechanisms available through the Lincoln County Code already. But in addition to that, we can say that if someone has three written determinations of violation in the course of a year, we can hold a hearing to revoke the license, or if they're coming up for renewal, deny the license. It's an annual renewal for that license. And, of course, one of the requirements to operate a VRD when this program goes into effect will be you have to have a license. If you fail to have that license, you can't operate a VRD. That's kind of the final leverage you've got for doing that. So we've got a process. It's a formal process for dealing with complaints. It includes hearings, includes appeals, which we need to do for any kind of administrative code to enforce it. And so we've got a mechanism to deal with. As I indicated, if you have three or more violation determinations in a year, that's grounds for revocation of an existing license or non-renewal of a license on the annual basis here. And so if we deny or revoke a license, we'll also hold a hearing. That's separate from the determination hearings. And again, as I indicated, the failure to maintain a valid license means you can't operate the VRD. There's another one important component here is that Commissioner Hall did indicate is that these VRDs are subject to our transient room tax. We're collecting from a number of places out there now, but we don't think we have them all by any means. One of the requirements in order to maintain and renew your license annually is you got to make those, you got to collect that transient room tax and remit it to the county. And failure to do that is grounds also for revocation or non-renewal of the license. So again, that's the equal playing field that he was alluding to earlier. We're working right now with the Sheriff's Office and the Treasurer's Office to put together all the component parts, the applications, the necessary. We're going to do some additional work on developing some software programs to track all this. There probably is nobody better that you could think of than a Sheriff's Office who's going to be able to research and determine where a VRD is in the county. So if you fail to get a license, be ready to get that letter coming from the Sheriff's Office because they're going to find out. You know, they're going to track, they're going to be able to figure out whether or not you're operating a VRD. I mean, there'll obviously be an opportunity for the neighbor says somebody's operating a VRD two houses down and it doesn't appear like they've done, met the requirements or gotten a license, then we can investigate those. But again, having the Sheriff's Office in charge of the licensing program means that we're going to follow up on these things pretty carefully. They'll also then do the enforcement activities too, in conjunction with my office. And we are going to charge a fee. That's going to be determined by the Board of Commissioners. We've been looking at that, the way that's set up, and our recommendation at this point is that the initial fee will be $175 to get the license and then a $90 annual renewal fee. So that's kind of the broad outline of what we're proposing here, and now's a great opportunity to either ask questions or give us comments.
No, I was just wondering how you're going to enforce the number of people, because it's...
Well, you know, that's a difficult thing to do. What we can do, of course, is we can work with the property owner. We're going to be able to go in and look at records. You know, so if somebody actually, with the key one on the front end of this thing is when you advertise it for 18 people.
What if you don't advertise?
They don't advertise. Frankly, we were saying there's a number of them that already advertise above that amount. So the first thing it's going to do to get that first break is that they won't be advertising. If they do, they're in violation, and we'll proceed with that. You know, that's a difficult one. That is somewhat difficult, but occupancy is difficult in any circumstance. Anyway, that we have occupancy requirements all over the place we have to enforce, and so it's difficult. One of the things we can do is, of course, go out. If there's a complaint, we can investigate, and we can actually find out how many people are staying there that night. And we can look at, you know, we can pull and look at a contract, if they have a contract for staying there. And, of course, remember, the rent, the owner is going to have to state very clearly these requirements are in place. They're going to have to provide this information. You're limited to this occupancy of such and such here. So, ultimately, even if that's violated by the renter and does that, and, you know, we've got an opportunity to go back with the property owner and say, look, if this is occurring repeatedly over here, that's a potential violation. You get written up on that and potentially get your license revoked if it's... repeatedly.
These are all going to apply for the unincorporated areas?
Unincorporated areas only.
Right. That's the only area of our...
Although I will say this. My recent discussions with, especially with Lincoln City, who's gone through, and actually I was hearing this now, they've been dealing with their ordinance and their visions for 6 years, trying to pull things together and finally figure it out, is that is one area that they wanted. We're trying to look at that as possibly being uniform across the county, is that VRD limit of 60.
And just a hypothetical, I think we've talked about at some of the previous discussions. You know, say the sheriff responds at midnight and there's 18 people in the house, and two of them say, well, wait a minute, we're staying at the motel in town. Realistically, he's not probably going to do bed checks. But on the other hand, if there's 30 people in the house, and he says, okay, shut down this party. Those of you who aren't staying here, go back to your motels, and nobody makes a move to leave, then that's probably a good sign they're over occupancy.
Yeah.
Yes?
Or there are 8 adults and 16 children. You have an age thing. I also have an age limit in my motel, and it's zero. I mean, if there are 4 people and 2 of them are infants, that's 4 people.
Right.
You don't have that. You have a 2-year or something, or
yeah. And that's again, that's the kind of comments we want to hear.
Yeah, playing off that too, because I have a motel.
Sure.
If you go to these houses, because we've already had this situation in our motel, if they're drinking, they can't kick them out.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And you know, we were told when we had a situation, if we had to pay and drive the person who's the problem to another property and pay for them. And I'm looking at the sheriff's going, are you crazy?
Wow.
So I don't know how that is all going to come
into play. That's a good question.
Because it is. That's a big one. Because most of them are.
Now, again, the way that I look at it, the real leverage on this thing is if we can document a violation, I don't know that we're going to resolve that violation that night. But if we can document and get enough evidence that there is a violation, and we make the determination. If the owner doesn't agree with our determination, they can appeal it. But we get to make that determination based on evidence, you know, what we're doing here. And frankly, the way that the leverage you've got here is if it happens, you know, so many times, you face the possibility of revoking your license. The easiest thing for us to enforce this particular ordinance is somebody who tries to operate without a license. That I can go to court with, and I've got a lot of room to do
something. Taking it into circuit court.
Taking it into circuit court to say they're operating without a license, and that's just the court will ask them a simple question. Do you have a license or do you not?
And if they can't produce a license?
Can't produce a license, then basically we've got some other tools we can say can't operate.
So what happens then if they keep renting, and we've got evidence they keep renting after you
violate violate a court order.
You get fined, right? Pretty stiff fines.
Well, there's a lot of different tools you've got.
Yeah.
The tools you've got in any kind of civil action for something.
Because what if they say, because we have a lot of properties around our property that I've owned mine 30 years, they've owned it longer than I've owned mine, and they rent it to their friends and their family, and their friends' friends, cousins, uncles' friends, and, you know, the church group, and they don't advertise, they just have a core group of people who know, and, oh yeah, hey, call, okay, I'm so-and-so's friend, so how, they're not going to go get
Well, frankly, if a neighbor comes and calls and says it looks like they're renting this out, we'll investigate. We'll go say.
Are you going to tell them who called?
No.
That would be an anonymous call. If there's a complaint, remember, if there's one of the complaints that you're making, the noise, you're going to have to clarify that because we're going to have to do some determinations with that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we know one retired county employee who has a condo in Sisters who does rent it, but again, only to family and friends and trusted friends of friends. So same thing, talking about.
So do they have to get a license?
Under the ordinance. And if they
straightforward definition.
Unless nobody says anything.
Right.
Well, you know, you're going to catch everybody. So like walking down the street and watching the guy that speeds. 30 guys speed, but only one guy gets caught. You go with the resources you've got, try and get people to adhere to the law.
Out of the 30 speeders. I want ratio
the difference, we got here is now we're going to have a cop who's looking at speeders.
Yeah.
So you've got somebody dedicated to looking at those particular issues. Are we going to catch every single one of these properties? Probably not.
But I think we'll catch more.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think what she's referring to is that incidental use clause in the county code. And I have an issue with that. I was going to ask, when you studied Tillamook, what was their county code regarding incidental?
Incidental use, I think they follow the IRS regulations, which basically says that if you rent it out more than 7 days, that's not incidental.
Okay, here's another question. The state of Oregon requires soon to be 1.8%.
Yep.
That is on, if you rent it for 1 day, it doesn't matter. They are across the board. If it's rented and you're pocketing anything, whether it's to your relative or a friend or a friend.
Well, we define the same way. It's for remuneration. If you're getting money, that's considered rental. I don't care who it comes from.
Yeah.
It's here's the situation. I'll tell you where there is an exception, and it'd be the exception to the state tax. It is right now. I own a vacation rental down here, or I own a vacation home down here, and I allow Bill to come down and stay, and I don't charge him.
As a guest, no charge.
And I got every relative, short-tail relative I've got comes down and stays in there. As long as you don't charge him, they're not going to regulate that. And we don't regulate it now. And nobody does.
But the people she's talking about, they're going to use that incidental clause that the county has. If they use it for their own personal, it's their second.
If they're using it more than 7 days, that's not incidental.
But that doesn't say so in the county code.
It says incidental use, and that's the IRS definition. And we're going to issue a clarification of that so it's very clear.
Okay.
It's very clear.
So when I asked the treasurer about one of my cottages that I do use and my family uses, and of course I don't charge my family, but when we're down there using it, technically she said, yes, I don't have to collect lodging tax for that unit because it's incidental to my use.
And one of the things we'll do as part of this whole process is clarify that term incidental.
Okay, good.
No, that's important. And that's a good, that's a very good point for you, and it's something we intended to do. We've already talked about that.
Excellent.
That we're going to need to do that.
Okay.
Make it real clear.
So, my next question.
Yes.
What about the health department? What about, we have to pay as a business the business fees. We have to have Amy come along or whoever's in the office coming down, go through everything when we're a business, which we're owner-operators.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, we're Johnny on the spot because it's our livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
What about a lot of these vacation houses that are, some of them I've seen online are actually dangerous in a sense. If I had extension cords going everywhere, plugging in, and I know you can't, I know once again you're going to go back and say, we can't catch them all, like the speeding thing, but is that going to be something that if, you know, if there's a situation, if someone comes and stays with us and says, oh, my family's staying at that property, but there's just so many things that aren't safe for the kids or whatever the scenario is, and we want to come over here and hang here all day, which we don't allow because we have you can only have so many in each room. Mm-hmm. How's that going to be addressed?
It's not. You're regulated because, in this sense, you're regulated because state law requires you to be regulated. You know, we're implementing state law when we do those things. That's what we're having to do. So if you've got operating a spa or doing anything like that in yours, you know, there's regulations that do that. They don't have the same regulations for single-family dwellings that are rented as VRDs. They're not out there.
So then can I become one?
A VRD?
Yeah. My motel? Can I just...
No.
Why?
Because you're, by definition, you're not a VRD.
No, it's single-family.
You're not a single-family residence.
No. Well...
Those things are defined very differently. They're built and utilized very differently. Those are all covered under
condos. Isn't a condo considered a single family residence?
No.
No.
No, it's a multifamily residence.
No, it's a single structure. It's a what do you?
No, a condo. A condo has multiple families and multiple units in one structure.
No.
It's not a single family.
Planned unit development.
Townhouse.
No, it's a single building, two bedroom, two bath. It's a condo. It's not connected to anything else. It's a single standing structure. And it's a condo. Because the zoning...
Yeah, I've never seen a condo like that.
Well, because she has one.
Mine is.
And all the next to us are.
Development.
Yes.
Which technically, I mean, I operate as a 200 cottages, a motel.
Yeah.
But they are individual tax lots, and I'm taxed not at the motel rate, at the private residence rate, which is about...
I'll tell you one thing, we aren't going to be able to address now. In fact, it'll be the next discussion we have is, you haven't even started the Airbnb. You know, the whole concept.
How's that going to go in? Is that
right now, the only jurisdiction that's actually even taking and doing an attempt to look at is the city of Portland. And I've taken a quick look at their regulations, and it's like, this is like all of the maps. So we're not even going, let me just say this. We're probably taking what I'll call baby steps. You know, we're doing what might be VRD in terms of our program. We're going to do the things that we can handle, that we can deal with now. So you're raising some very interesting questions. I'll be very blunt. I'm not going to be able to answer those.
I mean, like on the question of inspections, you know, up front we discuss, did we want to require a full-blown inspection for the initial licensing? And eventually we decided no, because, I mean, in an ideal world, maybe we would do that, but...
Especially if you started reporting when nothing was constructed, and you started new construction and we're doing those inspections, that would work great.
But frankly, we don't have the capacity in the planning department or the health department. You know, they're more than busy with existing things. And I kind of stepped back, and as we were discussing this, you know, we said, what is the main problem we're trying to address? So the main problem is the impact on the quality of life in neighborhoods. And so that's what this is designed for.
Okay, so building on that thought.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not going to regulate Airbnb...
Okay. No, we're not saying we're not. We're just not.
No, I know. I understand. So what's to say all these vacation rental owners will say, okay, I'm going to be an Airbnb.
Yeah.
Well,
that's an Airbnb by definition is very different than, it's not, you know, an Airbnb is a very different way of doing things. Very different.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you
because
say that?
Because an Airbnb, mostly it's the person that's occupying the home, and then they leave it for a little while and let you come in and stay, and then they come back and occupy the home and go back and forth and back and forth.
No. You go online and look up some Airbnbs in this area, and they're houses.
Yeah,
they don't live there. They don't live in them.
Well, if they meet the definition of this, I'm whether Airbnb or otherwise,
okay,
they're going to be subject to this.
Okay.
I'm just saying that
I live there, you come over.
Yeah, you come over,
stay in your part-time or
anything. That's the part we're not going to live right.
But if it becomes a dedicated full-time or nearly full-time vacation,
then it
will go under these. Used by Airbnb or a local agency that manages it or whatever it is. Yeah, we're going to catch those. Ray, you had a question?
Oh, I was just listening to her. I would think you mentioned PUD, Plan Unit Development.
Yes.
PUD is what they're called. Right. There'd be a conditional use on them somewhere that defined what they were going to be.
Yeah.
And they may not be I'm sure they're residences.
Plan Unit Development?
It depends on
called planned unit development is that you get condensed use of the property. What I'm saying is you agree that there's going to be an open space and you're going to put the houses closer together as the example rather than having a standard building one. That's how you determine, like you just did one on the golf course up here that I just did one where the golf course is the open space, but we reduced the lots from standard lots down, so you've got more usage out of them, but the open space picked up. But there was a condition of use what they would be, whether they were single resident homes, and that, and they're not connected either, which came into first question.
Sure.
So you'd have to go back and do some research. But I think if the person is renting them all the time, or if you are, then they probably they're not a single resident home.
What about this question of the local contact person? What would be your opinions?
Well, listening to them and being involved with the fire department is, you know, we get those calls and we end up over in Bayshore, we end up other places, and sometimes our issue is, and the same thing that they will have issues with, is trying to get a deputy. And the deputy that really, if there's a major accident going somewhere, depending upon the hours, how many there are, especially like, you know, talking to landlords, they're short of people, is the issue that was occurred in Depot Bay, and that, you know, getting law enforcement really becomes, and if they're busy, they don't want to spend a lot of time. And so when they're dealing with somebody, or we're dealing with somebody, especially where alcohol is involved, or we don't know sometimes if there's a gun involved, we really need that person here. And then you get into that thing is, and I've had it over here on properties that soon I hold, you know, what are you going to do to them? Well, book them. And then I got to go to court, and it just isn't worth it.
Well, it's interesting. Ray, I'd really like to hear, especially from anybody who's an owner here that deals with these kinds of issues on a regular basis, we were hearing a little bit from a couple of the management companies here that they got really tight contracts. And they basically say that the people that rent from them, they actually like a lot of these, right? Renters, quote unquote, they want in their facilities. They don't want to rent out their facilities to somebody who's going to be trashing it and running parties late night. So part of what they do is they have some pretty strict contracts. I thought it was very interesting to hear that a lot of them are using the several private security companies to actually enforce their contracts for them. And go out there and actually shut things down so they're not making noise. And then, of course, what they do is they have the ability to actually go in there and say that. I guess a couple of them said they can kick them out.
Oh, yeah.
They, as the owner, will kick them out right there if they're talking
about trouble.
Well, we have a contract similar to what you're talking about, very restrictive, and it has a lot of no, you cannot do this, no big gatherings, no more, no, you know, but some people don't always follow those
always
things.
Have
the problem that we had is because the company's been in Bayshore and around this area, we have about 52 properties from Yonkers to South Beach. A lot of people think we own all of them.
Right.
So we get calls on things that don't have anything to do with us, and we get blamed for things that aren't our homes. But we still go further and say, well, we'll see if we can find out who it is.
Right.
We'll go down and make sure it's not our home. And we try to respond to it that way. But that's why it is important to have a local person.
Okay.
Because you can at least go and address it with your guests, not only safely,
careful,
you know, but we've gotten calls late at night, or just, you know, there was one recently that wasn't our house. There were 30-some people having a party next door to one of our houses, which was a rental property.
I live next door to Glenn there.
Okay, so but Glenn, actually, the owner just went down there, even though it wasn't our property, just to make sure that they weren't doing, and then we got the sheriffs involved and stuff, but it was a all night kind of, and a lot of neighbors thought it was our property, but it was a corporate Bacasa whose local person was on vacation. That wasn't our property.
Yeah.
So what we try to do, it's good to have a local person, because at least you can address it with your guests first. And then if it needs to go further, then you can kind of get.
Yeah.
But we state that in our, we can kick you out at any time.
So that is a good question. What if they have a local contact and the contact isn't available or doesn't respond?
Mm-hmm. Well, then that's one strike.
If
it's repeated, you know, if that happens more than three times within a year, it's potential you can lose your license.
Yeah, so like if you're a one-person shop and you go on vacation and you don't have a backup and something happens, strike. Yes.
Okay,
but
Bacasa is a different
kind of
it's a multi-billion
dollar.
Yeah,
national.
No, wait, just let me see.
Okay.
In our properties, we live on the premises.
Yes, you do.
I have a clientele that's been coming for over 50 years. Yeah. Sometimes the parents now are deceased and their children come with the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren. So we know who's staying in our property, and those are the people we want to entice because they come back year after year, and they're
good guests.
Good guests.
Yeah.
But we also live in a neighborhood that when I was growing up here, we knew all of our neighbors. We had school teachers and people who worked for the county. We had people all around us that had jobs in the county, worked here, you know, voted here. Anyway, now we are 100% surrounded by secondary homes. There are people that that live out of state. We don't even know some of them, except that I look on the tax records to find out who and then who I can call if there is a problem. Our main problem is fire. Mm-hmm. We have this dump just to the north of our nicest cottage. When you get a north wind, and they have a fire pit that's 3 feet away from a deck that is like a match thing waiting to happen. Those sparks are coming right at our place, which is all cedar-sided, so that's a concern. And then you have people that stay on the other side of us that set the big stump on fire, which is our landmark, and nobody will respond to it, because the fire department can't deal with it. It's supposed to be state parks, I guess, so I go down there with a shovel and have a heart attack trying to get buckets of water and sand on it to put it out. It's completely destroyed on the south side because of three vandalisms just in the past few
years.
One
of them actually was our guest. It was me. And now we do have like a letter with that house that talks about the story and saying, please, and we, you know, tell our guests this is a land, you know, don't start a fire down. I mean, you'd think they would know, but that's why we have to do signs and 100 contracts and all these things, because people do that kind of dumb stuff.
But now back to the Bacasa situation. Uh-huh. They rent really upscale, nice homes that other people own. So they have high-quality stuff in there, and they provide the maintenance and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're making so much money that they are buying properties, and they bought a little motel next to us. So we are living next to a motel that is unoccupied. I mean, it's occupied by people coming in and out, booking online, punching in their key code, and they may never see a property manager. So you can go online, at spring break and book a room for two and have eight of your college friends show out with their dogs. There's no manager on site.
I haven't heard that.
But they're taxed as a motel, so once again, their property, which is about the same size as our property, is a third of what we pay in property taxes. And they have no one on site. They do have numbers to call. It can be anywhere from a half an hour to...
We would agree with that. We have people stop in our office who've gotten an email with a code, and they have no idea who the person is.
Thank you. I was just saying.
They can't find the house. Yeah. We try to search for them, try to help them, try to make a phone call for them. Wow. Yes. They're not already customers, but they have no contact person. None. Who's on site? Just they've got an email.
But they're just saying this is a motel.
They bought the motel.
They also bought Ocean Cove and Yalhotson. Have you talked to Yalhotson at all about their? Because they use their lodging tax that they collect to hire people that are on call 24/7 if there's a noise. They obviously have Lincoln City flooding, parking problems, and garbage issues and everything. We're in the no man's land, dead zone, you know, where it takes longer to get a sheriff and where if you have a fire issue.
Yalhotson doesn't have a city tax.
Yeah.
But they do have...
A lodging tax.
They do have the city lodging tax.
Yeah, so. And they also require, down there, we have to have in each window of the house, we only have a couple down there, but we have to have a picture of how they can park in the driveway, what our... name and phone number on the house.
Yeah, and that's sort of what we're doing.
We have to meet with someone from the city every time we open a house.
Right.
So that they can okay it.
Okay.
I meant to call ahead and ask somebody from Yalhotson, because they work pretty consistently to develop that. I have no idea how it
works. and we have a city tax there, too, that's
the one who goes around and looks at the houses and stuff like that.
There are days in the summer where we only have 9 rentals. So we have 9 guests that come in. They stay a week or two at a time, which is glorious. That's our ideal.
Sure.
And we deal with them. Maybe they'll come up and borrow a game or get a kite or something. But other than that, once they're there, they're checked in and happy.
Perfect.
And there are days where we have up to 5 or 6 vacation property management, or vacation people that have rented through property management and don't have a clue where they're going, or want to buy our firewood, or want to know if they can borrow our movies,
or get angry at you because you don't know where to tell them to go.
Where the property is.
I bet you can tell them where to go.
We're hoping that they're going to say, forget this, let's stay here.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many.
Stay with a friendly local place.
And so my GPS says that I'm supposed to stay here. I'm like, okay, fine, stay here. I'll rent your room.
Yeah.
But are you so-and-so? No.
No.
But my GPS, I'm like, I don't know what else to say.
You're on the edge of the ocean.
Yes. Exactly. You know, and then they come in, the same thing with the Picasso rentals. They come in and they have no contact people, no nothing. Some of them don't even have the city. They have 2712. Where's 2712?
Boy.
How do I know where 2712? What? Yachts, Newport, Lincoln City? When? I don't know.
Oh, boy.
What do you want me to tell? I'm being, obviously a little different here. I'm being very polite and very nice and saying, okay, well, is it Walmart? I don't know. Is it Yachts? I don't know.
Can you look on your cell phone? Because did you make it on the computer or on the cell phone?
Yes.
You pay by credit card because you can call the number on your credit card.
Well, could you do that for me?
You remember when we did that a few years ago? I don't know if anybody here was affected.
Yes.
But it surprised me, and again, I'm sure Ray was aware of it, that up until... I don't know, 8-10 years ago, it astonished me that if you were building between Walport and Yalhotson, you had a choice of whether you took a Yalhotson address or a Walport address.
Well,
and so you go Walport, Yalhotson, Walport, Yalhotson.
It's still that silly because where our property is, across the street is Yalhotson. So if I move my mailbox across 101, I'd be Yalhotson. But on my side, we're Walport till you get up to the little bridge that's Big Creek. Once you go over that little bridge, then it's all Yalhots going to Yalhots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, at least we tried to draw a line and make it a little more logical.
So
So we know.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
We haven't heard from you, and I want to make sure you have an opportunity to want to say anything.
Oh, I'm fine. Okay. I've been into Jim Murphy, one of the Ocean Creek Bed and Breakfast.
Okay.
Okay.
But I'm just listening. It's interesting. I used to live in Lincoln City for 24 years, so I know what Mr. Belmont's talking about when he mentions Lincoln City ordinance. It's been quite a tumultuous thing for the benefit.
Okay.
And I just talked to Diane today, your partner, and learned that you are our South County representative on COCA now, which is my next big, you know.
Yes.
And that's not doing a fair representation of the unincorporated areas, which is what it was established.
That's very high on Commissioner Hunt's agenda.
I know. And I'll just try and quit.
That's okay. That's okay. A lot of these issues spill over on each other. So, any other comments or questions? I mean, it sounds like, you know, I think one of the property managers in Lincoln City the other night said that they liked this because it would give us a tool. I think it was a phrase that he used, not us, to deal with the bad actors. Obviously, those of you who are here tonight, just by being here and also what we've heard from you, you're the good guys. You're doing it right. But we know from some of the experiences you've had from adjacent properties, obviously, not everybody is doing it right. And so this is what we're really hoping will be a reasonable and useful, you know, and again, with the Lincoln Beach, Glendeaden folks, I think in one of the earlier hearings, I tried to tamp down expectations a bit because we heard a lot about the chaos of the 4th of July. And, you know, it does give us another tool here, but on the other hand, I think you all know it already. Every law enforcement agency, whether it be city, county, state police, they're overwhelmed on that night, and they're doing the best they can, but they're never going to get to the majority of calls that come in unless, good Lord forbid, an actual fire starts. So, but, you know, this is a tool that hopefully will make it better, and that's why we've done it.
Thank you for doing that.
Well,
you're right. We have to pay room tax. They should have to pay room tax.
Yeah, I agree with the fairness argument. Totally.
We're small little properties, and we've been
Someone actually called to our attention when this conversation started. You know, a lot of these places, even if they're not with a management company, have their own web page, and one even advertised right on the web page. We do not collect the county room tax.
There's more than one, but...
Yeah.
I'd say that's the one thing we really do not have a clue.
Yes.
You say that how it's changed in your neighborhood out there.
Uh-huh.
But we really don't have a good handle on how many are going to come in through this.
And we heard from Lincoln City after the annex roads in. We were capturing a lot of them, but not all of them. So.
Craigslist.
Again, having somebody doing the enforcement administration is we're going to have somebody who's thinking and doing this.
And again, I don't think we said that this will create a dedicated halftime position, and of course, that person then will be backed up by the other resources in the sheriff's office.
It's a funny thing, you know, we put our house up for sale in Austin Highlands. And sold it, and I opened up the front door, and his card fell out, and I picked it up, and it was from the assessor. And he said, come to see the new, check the new construction out. Well, what we had is we had a downstairs area where we had a small cooktop in that for mother-in-law. It was a mother-in-law's apartment, but they put it down as an apartment. So they are checking the multiple listings. For construction. So the same thing maybe could be done.
Well, they are.
Are they
who do you think is going to be the best investigator in the world? The sheriff's office? They know how to investigate. They know how to look at things. So they're going to have all the tools and resources to be able to do that.
Yes. So along that same line, when the 12 giant six-person jacuzzis were delivered to the property next door for installation on decks, which are about 4 feet deep, meaning that they would be expanding, and they didn't have a building permit.
Ooh.
Yeah, they gutted the whole office and everything. I mean,
now that is a violation. And if it's reported, it will be investigated. But, you know, and again, that's kind of a reality of life, and I know that not everybody seems to realize this, but given the resources that are out there, most enforcement is complaint-driven.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're investigating a really heinous crime, you know, a crime of violence, a burglary that they stumble on, most things aren't enforced consistently, but the complaints drive it.
But if you have these regulations in place, and at least the property managers or whatever have either a contract that people have to abide by, at least the owner of the property will have a little clout to go back to the renter and say, look, you specifically had an allowance of 3 cars and 8 people or whatever.
Exactly. So we hope it'll be another tool for you as managers to say, look, there's your property ordinance here. And here's something we heard interesting, I think, from one of the Blue Eden Beach people, is that they talked to somebody who was, you know, a nearby house for sale that was up for sale, and they talked to some people who were looking at it. Turned out they were thinking of buying it, and their realtor said, they'd also been looking at a property in Lincoln City, said, you ought to buy it here because there's no regulation of VRDs in the unincorporated areas. Well, now that's going to change if we go with this.
Of course, the other way we went to Corvallis, where we came, people say, you don't want to buy these condos, this is where all the students are at.
Yeah. All right, any other comments or questions?
Thank you.
Thanks for coming out tonight.